Welcome back to Up the Coast with Alex and Britt. We are on episode 3 of the podcast, so thanks for joining us. On today's episode, we're going to recap the Shriners Children's Clearwater Invitational, some ACC and SEC matchups, and then take you around a few other updates from across the conference from this past weekend. So first and foremost, let's start with just some national rankings that came in. Britt, you want to take them through just kind of what the NFCA poll came in at yesterday?
Yeah, we've got 4 teams in the top 20. Number 8 is Florida State, 11 Duke, 15 Virginia Tech, 18 Stanford, and then receiving some votes, which Virginia, Cal, and Clemson, and I think Virginia could receive a few more votes after we saw them play this weekend, but we'll get into that.
Yeah. Britt, what were your thoughts with where the ACC is right now?
I think, you know, the 3 teams that we thought were going to be competitive and can make a deep run, Florida State, Duke, Virginia Tech, are doing what they're supposed to be doing. Stanford's taking care of business. But I think the ACC overall is, I heard the ACC's name get mentioned a lot this weekend watching those games down in Clearwater. So I think we're making a statement early.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the conference is just in a really good place with like the visibility. I also had a great time to just watching softball all weekend long. I do love the early season because of all the tournaments going on. And it's just like constant all day, all night. You've got softball just at your fingertips. So I hope everybody's enjoying it as much as we are. But let's start with the Clearwater Invitational Tournament. Clemson currently at 4-6 on the season so far. They lost to Missouri, Kentucky, Auburn, and they beat Ohio State. I feel like those Clemson Tigers are just going through a bit of a rough patch early this season.
Yeah, and not to make it worse, but they also lost to UCF too. They went 1-4 on the weekend. It was not, if you're a Clemson Tiger fan, you are not excited about this weekend coming off of this weekend. But John Rittman said it could take 20 to 25 games to figure out who they are and what they can be. So we're what, 10 games into the season, so about halfway to that point where he thinks he can maybe figure out who his team is. When I watched them and just taking ability, playing catch, hitting, pitching, putting all that aside, it kind of looked a little lost to me. And I'm not sure that I was expecting that from this team, even though they graduated what was Clemson softball. You know, Valerie Cagle, Mackenzie Clark, help me with Aaliyah Logaleo. I mean, all of them. Yeah. Millie Thompson. That was Clemson softball, and there were so many of them, and they were all leaders in their own right. You know, they were the foundation, and then you take that all away, and then you have this new group. A lot of them were there, but they never had to step into this leadership role. And to me, they just kind of seem like looking left and right, like who's going to do it instead of like having that person. Did you get that sense, or am I just making all this up?
No, I agree. And I also think that this is where, like, obviously we know that the storyline has been Clemson and Duke, newer programs, just with, you know, having softball later at the university itself. And so this is where like having identity, having a culture, all those things are so important, because those players and all the great talent that you mentioned having graduated, those, what they had with their career, that can't be Clemson's identity. And it needs to be something that no matter who the players are, no matter who's out there on the field, who the coaching staff is, like there needs to be some definition around what is the Clemson program. And I think that they're just in this phase and creation phase, because they did get talent very quickly. At that point, I do feel like you're just so concerned with winning. And so I could see Clemson like taking a step back to take a leap forward,
I think what you said, they were worried about winning, right? We're starting this program. Let's start it off right by winning ball games, not necessarily building what's coming behind us. But I think there's talent there for sure. I think the two people that I would expect to, as they get more comfortable in that 20-25 game mark as the leaders of this team, Alex Brown and Maddie Moore, that's who I'll be looking to right now. And even Julia Noller. But Alex Brown, she's hitting .417. Maddie Moore, .556 with 3 home runs, and this was her first weekend on the field. She didn't play opening weekend. So I'm going to look for those two to really be the catalyst of leadership and just taking control of this team. And they've got a two-way player, Macy Cintron, a freshman. I want you to remember her name, and anybody listening, remember that name. She's my early freshman of the year for the ACC. She's a two-way player. She hit 93, 4 home runs and 12 RBIs already. So the talent's there, I think, Alex. I think the question mark's in the circle, but the offensive talent's there.
No, I agree. Well, that's where it starts, right? You've got to be able to play to win some ball games and stuff. And that's ultimately what's most important. It is, no matter how people want to look at it, your wins and loss columns is crucial. But then I also do love, like, I left UCF out on accident with Clemson losing to them, which that game, though, was absolutely crazy. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat. You had a couple of coaches tossed. Rittman got tossed and then crashed. Coach Repley, she got tossed as well, both by the same umpire. I know you had some opinions by that, but talk about just one, the umpire maybe a little, and then just the passion and stuff that we saw out there on the field.
Well, I think part of it was, you know, Alex Leap has a history with Rittman, the umpire. He's the same umpire that threw out Rittman and Mackenzie Clark last year. So there's some bad blood there. But if you have a team that isn't leading itself, sometimes as the head coach, you've got to be the one to fire them up. You have to start being that on the field leader in a way that you can. And Rittman took advantage of it. And I'm not a lip reader, but I think I saw, "You're going to effing throw me out right now." So, I mean, he went out there with the intention of, you know what, this is, if somebody on the bench isn't going to do it, then I've got to do it. And, you know, his team did come back and score some runs, get fired up.
Yeah.
Ultimately didn't come out on top, but, you know, he's a veteran seasoned coach, seen a lot, and he's trying to be an example for his team, I think.
Yeah. Well, and then you talk about Rittman getting tossed and then Repley getting tossed too. I think it was kind of funny, I'm not going to lie, just because you see her get tossed and I don't think she kind of knew at first, like, because her back was turned by the time Alex Leap tossed her, right? Like,
you tossed her back, turned, give me
okay, that. Great. You know, but then she turns right back around and is like, okay, fine, you're going to throw me out, I'm going to get my money's worth too. Yep. And like, I mean, just let him freaking have it. Yep. So that was some good shit, but I was fired up just like on my couch watching, but.
But Clemson needs some of that. They need some of that fire, that energy. You're not lost. This team's not lost just because of who graduated. Like, take some ownership, guys. Let's go. You got it. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So Clemson off to a rough start, but hopefully looking to pick it up. I do think a lot of teams have that same mentality of, you know, the first 20 to 30 games. I mean, it's a crapshoot. And when I say that, it's like, you just don't know what you're going to get out there on the field. And that is across the country. It's not just a Clemson thing, not just an ACC team thing. So looking to see kind of what they do in the next few weeks, but let's transition. And we got to talk about the Noles because damn, they're looking maybe the best I've ever seen them right now.
That's some high praise. That's champion Florida State, and this is the best you've ever seen?
I think maybe this early, yeah.
Okay, I mean, that's very fair.
Thank you. So, I mean, obviously having to put my ego aside a little bit too, but this team just looks like they're clicking, and that's the stuff you can't teach. We talk so much about the been there, done that mentality, and obviously teams like that 18 team, teams like that 21 team, and 22 team, 23, man, like, we got to cover them a lot, but they're looking really damn good. So
they are there. And you mentioned this early, because I feel like every year we see Florida State drop some games that they really shouldn't do, but they're not doing it this year. I mean, they took care of Missouri, Ohio State, Wichita State, UCF, and I'm going to make a bold statement and possibly the best offensive led team in coach's career. Is this her offensive era? Like, I mean, they look good. Usually we're talking about the pitching, right? But you can't get over Kennedy Harp. What in the world is that girl doing? She's hitting .704, three doubles, three triples, four home runs, 18 RBIs in 9 games. Alex, have you seen something like that?
No, it's stupid. And the numbers she's putting up, like, are freakish in the best way. I do love the 18 RBIs, though, just because, one, it means she's coming through in clutch moments, but two, it means people are on base a lot. And I know in the past, like you said, you know, Lonnie went through like a pitching era and defensive era and all these things, right? And I do think, though, it's important to talk about, like, it starts in the circle, but when you're a hitter, man, you got to push runs across the board. And last year, like, when Florida State was struggling pitching a little bit, just with depth, I know that there was a time where, like, they had to score 8 runs in a ball game just to feel comfortable, because they know that the depth was lacking. And that's just not even a knock at the pitching staff. It's more of a compliment to all the opposing hitting teams that they were facing, because the hitters in today's game are just so damn good. That it's hard to get through a couple times in the lineup. And so the numbers Harp is putting up is ridiculous. Issa Torres is phenomenal, coming off a really good freshman season last year and then starting her sophomore campaign looking legit. And then, of course, Michaela Enfield, man, I mean, she's just a baller too. Yes. So,
and I'm happy for her too, because remember earlier in her career, she wasn't very consistent, up and down, always clutch. But, and then last year she was going off, very consistent, putting up numbers. And then she broke her hand, got hurt and had to deal with that. But this year, I mean, she's picking up right where she left off. I'm happy for her. She's a big part of that leadership team too, for the Knolls.
Agree. And just a lot of, like, I say young talent, but it's kind of like that mid-range age. You've got some good transfers that came in and then obviously some phenomenal leadership, but you've got a lot of talent that is also going to be back next year too for Florida State. And I'm excited to see those younger girls having a lot of success in the circle. I mean, Annabelle Weidra, she's a two-way player too. There's a lot in the game right now that are really good. And she's having a phenomenal start too of her season in the circle especially, but she is playing defense too. Jazzy Francik, I mean, she is coming in clutch in some big moments. Somebody that I feel like it is a starter as well with her approach and stuff, but is coming in a more reliever role type now. And I'm interested to see how that evolves, because I'll be like curious, is that going to be her identity or role this season? Is she going to keep getting the ball and the starts in the circle, you know, down the road? But she's somebody else that has so much potential. And of course, McKenna Reed and Julia Opsahl and Ashton Danley. I mean, like, it's so good.
Yeah, she's got a coach has a lot to choose from right now. But the freshman Jazzy, I think I really do like her in that reliever role, because she has she has three different speeds. So if you're going from Weidra to Jazzy and you're used to hard and left and right and up, and then Francik comes in and it's got an off speed rise and a change up. I mean, she just somebody that can really frustrate hitters, especially late in games when they feel like they've made adjustments to the starter. So that's the perfect kind of pitcher, I think, for Kocha to have to be able to play around with.
I agree. And I'm excited to see where Florida State is right now and where they continue the next few weeks. And we'll talk about that at the end, but I'm excited for this weekend especially. So while on the topic of pitching, though, let's transition to Virginia. This is a team that really impressed both of us. I think impressed probably people across the country this weekend. And it's no surprise, because Coach Joe Harden, who has been at Virginia now for, what, nine seasons? I mean, a while, but she has worked her absolute ass off to just really recreate this program. It was a program that I feel like it was very dull when I was competing, and to nobody's fault, it was just one of those that just wasn't given the TLC, the support from the university, and she has really come in there and changed things around one. So congrats and hats off to Coach Joe and Coach Harden, more formal. But let's talk like pitching depth there, because they're also getting it done in the circle.
Yeah. I mean, last year everybody talked about Eden Bigham, right? And rightfully so. We saw what she did in regionals. She shut out Miami, Ohio, who hit 160 home runs in two straight games. But she's got Savannah Henley and Courtney Lane and Ava Hodges, and they're working as a staff. There's only two complete games on the season, so these pitchers are feeding off of each other, working well, complement each other. And Joanna Harden, her title isn't the pitching coach, but she was a pitcher. She's got pitching background, so she knows how to manage staffs and has a little extra insight into that. And I think it's now that she has the talent there that she's able to develop it and put them in the best situations to be successful. But yeah, I don't. It's hard for me to pinpoint like what makes this team so good. I just think they believe in each other and believe that anybody can step up at any point in time. Macy Eaton is hitting .156, but she has 11 RBIs. So she's coming up when it matters. And that's having those kind of players step up in those big situations. It's a recipe for success. The more reps you get, the better they're going to get.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know like one of the things that you'd said when we were talking was this is a team whose record right now is 5-5, but it could very easily be a 7-3 start to their season through the first 10 games. And obviously a couple of losses, but within a run on a few of them between Auburn and Texas A&M, which are very good ball clubs. Auburn right now is undefeated, so you gotta like kind of tip your cap, right? But just knows how to win late in the ball games. And you talk experience, you talk the importance of just depth across the board in your roster. And I do think that this is a very good Virginia team that once they continue getting in these moments, which they're finally there, now they're gonna learn how to win in these moments. And I know I'm most excited, I think, to talk about that win against UCLA.
Yeah. I mean, they've been involved with four walk-offs early in the season, and they finally get one of their own against UCLA. I think probably the best competition they played this weekend is this UCLA squad. I mean, they've got the pitching, they've got the power, they've got the defense, the experience. They're a great team. And for Virginia to come back and hit a walk-off home run, MC Eaton, 0-2 count, and just blah. It was a fight all game, too.
Yeah.
They never looked like they were out of it. They just, I feel like they had that belief that, hey, I mean, getting walked off on three times already this season and then going into a one-run game in the seventh, you're like, it's very easy to be defeated by then, but absolutely not this team. And Eaton got around those bases on that home run so freaking fast. I think her home-to-home time is probably quicker than most people's home-to-first on that, because you could just feel that sense of relief, like, finally, we did it. We're on this end of the walk-off. And hey, that's a big-time win for this program, beating UCLA, and hats off to them to keep fighting and keep grinding after just coming up so close and short previous games.
Yeah, really good stuff. And again, you have to get there sometimes before you learn how to win there. So
yeah,
love to great see point. Yeah, love to see that paying off for Virginia. The Cavaliers are looking really legit. So let's move beyond the Clearwater Invitational Tournament and look at a few other teams and how they did this past weekend. So Stanford's off to a phenomenal start. They went 5-0 at the Cardinal Classic. And they won all their games with the run rule. So they're undefeated. Mm-hmm. Obviously, great just through the first almost 10 games. And they're leading the country in batting average, which I feel like is kind of surprising to me. And not because they obviously shouldn't or can't do it. But the story for Stanford for so long has been obviously like pitching and what Coach Alistair is doing in the circle there. It was the Nyjah Kennedys and everything else. And I love that they're finding this other identity with how good they're looking.
Yeah, you're right. This has been a pitching program, but now that with the Kennedy transferring to Texas Tech, they realize, hey, we got to hit, and they're hitting, and they're hitting. And I'm going to say that the competition they're playing so far this season is not the top notch, right? But still, to have a team batting average of .460 and winning all your games via run rule, I mean, that's a big deal. I don't care who you're playing. So hats off to them of finding that what they need to do to win, and they're going to have to hit, because in the circle, they're not going to be able to rely on just giving up one or two runs or shutouts consistently. So they're going to have to put up a lot of runs. And Emily Jones is hitting .600. Taryn Kern, a returner who high expectations this year, meeting them so far, .560, four home runs. And River Mailer, same kind of expectations, .481 with 11 RBIs. There's a freshman on their team that's not getting a lot of playing time, but when she does, she's making it happen. And that's Sydney Bullifin. Hasn't gotten a start, but she's hitting .667. And in six or seven at-bats she has, she's hit three home runs. So I'm going to see if she can find a way into that starting lineup, and that's just going to boost their offense even more. But I think Stanford's got to like where they're sitting, and they're going to get tested this weekend finally.
Absolutely. And I do think there's something to be said, though, because it doesn't matter necessarily about the opponents. Like, you still have to step in the box and stick to a plan and actually get the job done. So still putting big hits across, obviously leaving the yard a lot. That's really good stuff. And so, you can't always look at just like, oh, they're not playing that tough competition. And this is obviously more for anybody listening. Like, you have to still like know that as an athlete, even sometimes with these games, you have to be more disciplined because it's so easy to get hyped up for, your top 10 matchup or the SEC opponent that you're going to play and you just want to like kick their ass or whatever it is. Like, those are the easy games. Like, it's who are you when you're playing the competition that's not as sexy and stuff. And that's ultimately what defines us as players, because it's who we are every single day on the field. And that's why we call it a body of work and not just a day of work. Yeah. So love to see what Stanford is putting together. Virginia Tech, dude, Emma frickin' Lemley, like, what the hell? Like, I would love to use other expletives here, but like, phenomenal.
She's back, and we talked about it last week. It makes me so happy. I mean, this girl has been through so much in her career at Virginia Tech, from the illegal pitches to losing pitching coaches to just like the mental struggles and not having success, but knowing that you're good. She's showing us this year, back-to-back perfect games, and this one against a ranked opponent. Full seven innings, 16 Ks against Northwestern with a perfect game. So happy for Emma Lindley. People are talking about her again and talking about the Hokies in a good light. And I couldn't be more happy for Lindley.
Yeah, me too. This squad is looking good, but I love to see them having her back. And obviously a perfect game is, you know, a shout out to the pitcher, obviously doing well, Lemley, but it's also the team behind her, because the perfect game does not happen by yourself. It happens with a solid defense, getting the job done, taking care of the ball, and that's not easy work, especially against a top 25 opponent in Northwestern. So really good stuff. A couple of tough losses to LSU, but again, like learning moments. And if you're putting like losses up on the board, like your only goal and only hope at that point is you have a lot of good information and feedback to take with you. And so I'm hoping that, you know, Virginia Tech can assess what it was that they did well. But you also have to, again, like take all those failures and learn from them too, and look at them, really flip the script there, because it's not how you start, it's how you finish. So, you know, they might have a very likely chance to see LSU at some time down the road with postseason.
Yeah. So. In game one against LSU, they lost 7-2. Lemley didn't pitch that game. Mazarone, Kleiman, and Grizzard pitched. And I think LSU just beat them that game. And LSU's good. They've got a stud pitcher in the circle who's throwing her own perfect games. But in that second game, Virginia Tech's got to be a little bit frustrated with that one. They lost 7-4. Lemley went in. She looked good. Going against a good hitting team like LSU, you can't expect to really shut them out every time. But she only gave up 3 earned runs. The defense that you mentioned behind her in the perfect game gave up 3 errors that ended up costing them 4 runs. So I think there wasn't a complete game there for Virginia Tech, but they can tell themselves, hey, if we play defense and play like we can, we should have had that game. So they can take that positive out of there that they did not play their best. And they were in Baton Rouge, tough place to play. So I think even though they didn't beat LSU, they've got some good things to take from it.
Absolutely. And kind of moving over here to Duke. Duke, 7-3 on the year so far, definitely playing some tough competition. And we know that because Coach Young is not a slouch when it comes to her scheduling. And they went down to Florida this weekend and played in Gainesville, and a couple of good wins over Boston College, which is interesting, right? We like to see that early matchup just because they won't play in conference this season. And so then win over Boston College, Providence, Florida, which we'll get to that one in a minute, and then Binghamton as well. But yeah, what did you like that you're seeing from the Blue Devils? Because I know that they've obviously been like a preseason favorite, came in number one in the conference, and obviously last year's winner as well.
Yeah. Well, we talked last week about the question marks for Duke after their opening weekend in Clearwater at that tournament. Coming out game one against Florida, they got smoked. Mm-hmm. Cassidy Curd, she got the start, gave up 7 earned runs, 8 hits. And it was really that second time through the lineup that Florida really turned it on and had a couple big innings put together. And Duke only had 2 hits for themselves. So, I mean, I just think Florida showed us that, hey, that's why they're top 5 team in the country in that first game. But I was so impressed how Duke came out in game two. Marcia Young threw Cassidy Curd back out there, which I was like, okay, all right. She got hit pretty hard by Florida and then put her back out there, and they win 8-1. Mm-hmm. Cassidy Curd went 7 innings, just 1 earned run, 6 strikeouts. It was a great response. Offensively, I was really impressed with the bottom of the lineup with Jada Baker and Tessa Malauulu, but 8 and 9 really started their rallies with their big innings. 8 and 9 turned it over the top and got them in. So that bottom of the lineup really showing up for Duke. And I was just impressed with the response, because Alex, that's not an easy thing to do after getting run ruled by a top team and then having to come back out and face them again as a pitcher and as a team.
Oh, absolutely. If anybody tells you that's not in the back of an athlete's mind, like as you're stepping onto the field, they're lying. But at the same time, your really elite competitors love it. Like they love that, knowing that's in the back of your mind. And that's why I'm hungrier today, because they just kicked my ass yesterday. And, you know, it's like, yeah, you're not going to do it again. Like, let's go. And I just love that kind of fierce mentality. I love that Cass Curd wants the ball. And I love that the team showed up behind her, because I think the game is a game of adjustments. And we know very well, like, every game matters. But there are a lot of times where it's, again, about the body of work. And you look at a series, or you do play a lot of teams twice at some point, right? Whether it's going to be in a postseason opportunity. Yeah, you have those one game opportunities. But then the way the brackets fall, you somehow, some way, a lot of the time get an opportunity to see that same team later. And, you know, the team that won is thinking like, oh, like we're sitting pretty. We just, you know, did really well against them the day before, a couple days ago, whatever. And then to come back and respond the way they did, though, I think is what's most impressive for Duke right now. So I'm fired up. I still think that Duke is sitting in a really good spot. I love the difficult schedule that Coach Young is putting together. And I just think they got to keep plugging away, showing up every game.
Yeah. I wish we could give a little bit more analysis of what we saw in these games, but we couldn't watch them. They were not streamed on any platform. They had radio. I did listen to some radio, but not being able to see makes a difference. But at the end of the day, I think the fact that they came back in that second game and made a statement and made their own adjustments was big for Duke.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, maybe we'll work on the streaming and stuff. So hope there's no more of that this year because we love to watch our teams play.
Right.
So.
That's right.
Let's go talk about your Tar Heels, Britt.
Yeah. They're hitting the ball. They're hitting the ball well. But the big story was Britton Rogers transferred in last year from Georgia, and she threw a perfect game, the second of her career in a Carolina uniform. Funny enough is her first career start at Carolina last year is when she threw her perfect game. And then this season was her first start of the season and threw a perfect game. So I don't know, maybe Megan, we give her a couple more starts, but no, I was really excited for her to have the perfect game against Drexel with 8 Ks. So pitching was a question mark for me for UNC. Kenna Ray's doing her job, and then Britton Rogers throwing a perfect game, showing me that they do have some arms in there that can get the job done. So nice job, Britton.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. We will definitely keep up with the Tar Heels the next couple of weeks and looking to see what they do there. Louisville currently sitting at a 7-3. They had a nice ranked win over FAU, who FAU has come in and really impressed a lot of people. I know they're kind of shaky just right now. But again, everybody goes through that. That's why it's a roller coaster and you got to ride it. It's a marathon and not a sprint. You just got to take the days as they come. And then Syracuse currently undefeated too. So Syracuse and Stanford sitting pretty, both 9-0. Syracuse is leading the country in ERA right now at 0.37. So that's really legit. So the ACC in the circle is looking really solid. Obviously, the Orange are led by Madison Knight and Juliana Verney. So any thoughts on the Orange, Britt, or even Louisville?
You know, Syracuse, we saw Madison Knight throw last year and we're pretty impressed with her. Syracuse is a team that is easily overlooked, but they're undefeated and winning's hard. I don't care who you're playing. And to lead the nation in ERA with a 0.37 ERA and Madison Knight haven't given up a run in 19 innings with 27 Ks. All right. I'm going to keep an eye on the Orange. We'll see once they get challenged a little bit more, but good for them. Happy for that start.
Yeah, well, a couple of things coming up this weekend. Stanford, Thursday, they're playing Arizona. And Friday, they're playing Texas. So those will be a good couple of games, capping out their weekend against Arizona again on Sunday.
Huge.
We love to see the quality softball. Everybody's playing for really good softball right now. Obviously, conference play is going to be great, too. But everybody loves the out-of-conference matchups. Your Tar Heels are playing tonight, Britt, versus South Carolina. That'll be good.
Yeah, South Carolina's off to an undefeated start too, 10-0, I believe. So going down there and have a chance to make a statement.
Yeah, we'll see. Duke. Duke's at Marynetter this weekend. Marynetter, man, we don't have a ton of teams in Marynetter anymore. That was like the big tournament when we were playing. Obviously, Clearwater didn't exist yet. We sound super old, but excited to see how the Blue Devils fare. And they're going to play against Nebraska on Friday, which like I'm so fired up. Obviously, you got Jordy Ball, who's so good for Nebraska, and then UCLA on Sunday. So I love to see our ACC team squaring up against the Bruins. FSU is playing at home against Texas A&M on Saturday.
Alex is on the call. Everybody,
yeah,
not just to watch the Noles, but listen to Alex.
Super fired up for that one. That'll be a top 10 matchup. I mean, so legit. Like, I can't wait. And then Syracuse is going to Athens for a couple of games against Georgia. So I think that'll be good. Like, I'm excited to see Syracuse play some really good talent, too, because I got to call Georgia earlier this season, a.k.a. like a weekend ago. Yeah, and but Georgia looks really good. Obviously, Coach Baldwin is great. And so I'm excited to see Syracuse go compete and kind of measure up. Again, everything right now is about measuring up and seeing how we fare against really good competition. So
Yeah.
I feel like it's safe to say we're feeling really confident about where the ACC is and just the output and results that we're getting from our teams.
Yeah, and I think the scheduling, nobody can say the ACC is not playing anybody out of conference.
Right.
So in that FSU game, it's a doubleheader against A&M.
Yeah.
I like that. I mean, you're gonna test your team in game two. It's gonna be interesting. Emily Kennedy, the big arm for A&M. What's going to happen game two? How is Trisha Ford going to work that? We know how Lonnie can, but doubleheaders against top teams, that takes a toll on a player. So that's an interesting watch for me.
I think the winner that comes out of that game, again, I'm totally foreshadowing here, but I think it's just going to be a matter of who has the better depth. I say that now. So hopefully it plays out that way.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
It will be fun. It'll be a great weekend. And playing these teams, it's just going to make in-conference games and series even that more exciting when we get there. I'm not trying to rush this season along, but it's going to be fun when we get there.
Yeah, really good stuff. Well, as always, don't forget to like and subscribe to our content. We are on YouTube. We are on Spotify. We are on Apple. Britt, did I forget any? Am I good there?
Wherever you get your podcast.
Wherever you get your podcasts, like us, subscribe to us, send us comments or emails about other things that you would like to see us talk about and cover. There's a lot of good stuff right now, a lot of good softball going on across the country. So as always, we appreciate you guys and your feedback. And as always, just let us have it. So thanks for listening. And this was episode 3 of Up the Coast with Alex and Britt. Bye.